Hello, and welcome to the Butterfly Evolution Show. Thank you for tuning in with us tonight. Tonight is going to be a special night because I have two very special guests here with me, or hosts here with me. My son, Brandon Gator, and she is my daughter by way of what we'd say. I have Victoria Arnold in with us as well, who is my cousin. So she's here visiting and is going to assist in hosting the show tonight. This is going to be a show for all of us. Particularly, we're hoping that we have more younger people tuning in to tonight's show. This we want to discuss the Trayvon Martin, the death of Trayvon Martin, basically trying to determine or hear from our younger people as to where does this leave us? You know, what are their thoughts about all the things that we've heard surrounding this case? There's been so many avenues that have been taken in discussing this topic. And I think we all have been affected. I think that we all have and we all will be, as we should be. I think that there comes a time when we, all of us, just have to acknowledge where we are, face where we are, and move forward. We have to deal with some things in order to move forward. And this is what this show has always been about, change and moving forward. So, again, tonight we're going to talk about the Trayvon Martin story. And for the older people, just please kind of allow the younger people to kind of get in. I'm going to go ahead and open up the chat line and just send our messages out to Facebook and everything else so that, you know, we can just kind of get this going. So the chat line is open for those of you who are listening by way of chat. Remember, you do have to be a registered follower of the show in order for us to see that you've sent us a message or a question by way of chat. Secondly, if you're listening by phone, and for those of you who are listening by chat as well, you can always call in, 818-691-7406. Again, 818-691-7406. You can call in to ask any questions as well, even if you're listening online. You do have to select the number one in order for us to know here that you do have a question or a comment. Moving right along, again, we're going to talk about the Trayvon Martin story, and I want to just personally give my take on it as a parent, as a mother, of course, of one son that is basically labeled as a minority. My only son, not that it would matter if I had three or four, I would feel the same. And as a parent, I remember hearing the story of Trayvon Martin, and it didn't start there for me because I have remembered every case before Trayvon that I am aware of. So as you all remember a couple of shows back, when I first mentioned the Trayvon Martin story on this show, I also bought to use some of the names that I was more familiar with as well and some incidents that had happened with similar cases, whether it was dealing with police officers and things like that. So for me, it didn't start with Trayvon Martin. Certainly, the Trayvon Martin story is one of the – it's just unimaginable to put into words. And I think – what's more unimaginable is the process that has taken place with Zimmerman. Some people will say that, you know, I've had people tell me, you know, we just don't need to talk about it. We need to let the police do what they need to do. If we talk about it, we're going to be opening up racism. We're going to be opening up all these doors. Well, silence has become to me the way of the world. People don't want to talk about things. We want to be quiet. We want to, you know, not open the door. Well, we have to open the door. It is our responsibility to open that door. If you are not a parent, if you are, you know, an aunt, an uncle, a sister, a brother, this could somehow affect you in some way. You don't have to necessarily be a parent to be affected by what's going on. And more importantly, I think, what are we telling our young people, particularly our young males, what are we telling them if we allow them to see where a man can shoot a 17-year-old unarmed person and not in any way, shape, form, or fashion be convicted for it. And when I mean convicted, I'm just talking about that particular night. I surely, as you all, we don't know the full story, but regardless of the full story, regardless of the stand your ground law, besides all of that, we have a person that, number one, he was the shooter, regardless of the reason. The only thing that this young child had was, and even if it wasn't a young child, if the only thing this person had was Skittles and a can of tea, how is that stand your ground? Even if this young man went after Zimmerman's gun, how is that stand your ground? Because this person pursued this young child. I have a son sitting right here, and I have thought about this scenario in many ways. What if this was my son being pursued, and for some reason he turns and he sees this man here with a gun? What is he to do? You know, we can't ever say what we would do. Some people say, well, he should have ran. I mean, maybe so, maybe so. But you'd never know what you would do in that situation, because you may feel like if I run, you know, maybe he was there to rob. Maybe he thought he's here to rob me. If I run, he could shoot me and I could still die. So we never know what happens. But my concern is, because we cannot bring Trayvon back, this sad thing, but to allow this to happen and not demand something, and the police are, in my opinion, the police have said what they said by not arresting him. There is enough evidence. Remove stand your ground and all of that. To me, you allowed this man to walk free without so much as a drug test. Me personally, I think that is the least that should have been done, the least. Because what if he was drinking that night? What if he had one too many and just carelessly? That's no different to me than drinking and driving. You make a decision to drink, you get behind the wheel of a, behind the car and drive, you are responsible. You are accountable. You should be held accountable for your actions. So I think media has taken this to a different level. Now it's time to do something. It's time for something to be done. Because, again, more importantly, what are we telling our young people if we say it's okay for law enforcement to show up and see this young 17-year-old here on the ground, dead, no weapon, but we have this stand your ground law here, and because of that, they can walk away. Certainly, we all know, and I'm going to say it, people who all think that we should keep this closed, if it were the other way around, there is no question in my mind I would debate this with anybody, and I would stand alone in it if I had to. If it were the other way around, if Trayvon Martin was a 17-year-old white male and Zimmerman was a black male, there is no way Zimmerman would have walked that night. I don't care if it's stand your ground rule. I don't care what kind of law they have in this area. There is absolutely no way we would have had the same outcome. So what I'm saying to parents tonight, as a parent, I fear even more this very same thing happening to my son, my cousins. It is different, and I say this in the most loving and caring way. There is nothing like a mother's love. We are just different in the way that we love, and I'm not taking anything away from fathers, because we love differently. There's no different from, you know, fathers will say, oh, let them go. They'll be okay. We worry more. We are more concerned, and that's how we should be. We are just designed to be that way. But when a mother has to wait up at night and fear not just her son being robbed or, you know, murdered by the streets. There's enough going on in the streets, but when we also have to fear this very thing, the very people that we think are here to protect us, that takes it to another level. And how are our young boys not to be angry? How are they to think that their worth means anything to us? How are they to feel when they are approached by law officers? How? And I'm not saying that every police, we have bad apples in everything that we do. But this cannot go on. I'm challenging, I am begging everyone. We're working on some things here that we want to put in place, and we've been brainstorming some things, and I think we have one that we're going to go with, and that I hope that it's very beneficial to everyone. But you have to take a stand and do something where you are. You don't have to have a child to do this. You don't have to have a son to do this or a daughter. But let me tell you, just because you don't doesn't mean that you won't one day be affected. Trayvon, I'm sure, has aunts. He has uncles. He has cousins. He has friends. So we are all part of Trayvon's world because we, too, we are somebody's aunt, mother, friend. So after this show, and if you've just decided up until now to take a, you know, take just stand back and see what happens, then don't, because it's not about what happens right now, what happens next. It's about what we're going to start, what you are going to start in your area so that this does not happen again. We need to send a message to law enforcement and anybody else outside of law enforcement, anybody else, that our children, whether black, blue, green, they matter to us. Because as we were talking today, yes, it's more permanent with our black males and our black race. However, it doesn't just stop there. I've heard situations and cases where young white males are going through some of this same thing as well. So it's getting to a point where it just doesn't stop. And see, that's when it will turn, when it begins to be a little bit more of the white race. And I'm just going to say it like it is tonight because it is what it is. And if I offend you, I apologize now, but it is what it is. I see it the way I see it. If you have a different opinion of it, we welcome you to talk about it. But we can no longer allow our black males, if I expect something out of Brandon, then I should make sure that when he's going out there that he's as safe as he can possibly be, because I'm going to hold him accountable for what he does and the choices that he makes. So we should do the same for adults. We're sending our children mixed signals. We're expecting them to be held accountable for what they do, what they say. But then we will allow people to go and do whatever and say whatever and then not step up and stand up and say, we made a mistake here. Because as much as come out, if nothing else, Zimmerman should be in by now. But right now, what are they going to do? They can't bring back that night. They can't, you know, check his blood count now. They can't check his clothes now. So the message tonight is about, where do we go from here? How are our young people being affected by this? You know, to me, I think that they're just going to become even more angry and more skeptical of police officers and people of the law, so to speak. And we certainly don't need any more of that. We certainly don't. I, as a parent, have told Brandon from the beginning what to do, what not to do. When you're stopped, ask the police officer if you can call your mom and just, your mom has said that, and your dad has said to call home and just put us on the phone. We just want to be on the phone. And then, even then, you're taking a chance, because that could totally piss the police officer off. Totally. But we said that my mom and my dad wants me to call home if I'm ever stopped by the police officer. You know, and we had him ask because we didn't want them to just think he's taking out his phone and it's a weapon. But we had to say that because we did not feel comfortable and do not feel comfortable or safe with that happening. Again, not saying that all police officers are like that. I have come across some great, great police officers. But we are where we are, and it is what it is. And we cannot lose any more young people this way. I'm going to turn it over to Victoria. Again, we have Victoria hosting tonight, and we have Brandon hosting tonight. Two very phenomenal young people who are full of life. I dearly love both of them, and I have learned so much even today just kind of listening to them as we kind of sat around and talking about it. Some, they have heard things from their friends. And, you know, as Brandon told me when the story kind of first came out and we were talking about it within our household, I remember him saying to me, "Mom, you just don't know. This happens every day." And there are things that he has said that he's gone through that he's not shared with me. And I think that is going on a lot, you know. So talk to your kids, talk to your friends, to your children's friend, your say kid, talk to your sons and daughters, their friends. You know, when they come over, just ask them. If I go outside and my neighbor's children are outside, I said, you know, how are you doing? How is school going? Because sometimes they'll just open up to you more so than their parents, because parents are going to react out of emotion, out of love. There's just been a lot going on, I know, in my life these last few weeks. And you know, life is just too short, and we just really need to pick something and stand up for something. Just we need to. So I'm going to let Victoria introduce herself. You want to go first? Okay. Well, we're going to let Victoria and Brandon introduce themselves, and they're going to take it over from here. I'm going to be here. The lines are open for those of you who want to come on and share. And if you know of a story or if you are a parent, like I said, we do want our young people to get in on tonight's show. So just prepare yourself to kind of come in and let us know what you are thinking, what you are feeling, how has this affected you, and what your opinion is on how we move forward from this. And not separate, not in a separate way, because in no way are we trying to wake up racism, but, you know, I can't wake someone up that's already awake. So I'm going to turn it over to Victoria and Brandon.
How's everybody doing? My name's Brandon Gator. I'm Tammy's son. Just a little background on myself. I was born in Memphis, raised mostly in a military background, came back to Memphis in seventh grade, and there was a huge difference from what I saw. You know, I saw on military bases, you know, seemingly total equality. You know, every household was a different race. Every desk at my school was of a different ethnicity, and everyone spoke a different language, but they all came together for one common good, and that was, you know, to defend the country that we were taught to love, and that we were taught that was ours. Upon moving back to Memphis in seventh grade, I saw a totally different picture of the country that my father protected. I was introduced into crime. I was introduced into seeing drugs and guns being sold inside of my school. I was introduced into racism and social disparities between different ethnic groups, and just seeing how the white kids would sit on one side of the lunchroom while the blacks would sit on the other, and the Mexicans would sit over off in the corner. And I worked very hard in high school to get away from that, or at least to find a way to make that better, so that the generation that I would father would not have to see these things. And it's funny to hear that, you know, generations before said the same thing. And here we are, you know, 44 years after the death of Martin Luther King, and we're still marching for things like injustices with the Trayvon case. I graduated from the University of Tennessee, and I moved back to Memphis once again. And from there, I was like, okay, well, you know, I have my degree now. You know, things are going to be different. I don't have to. I shouldn't expect to see the same Memphis or the same social injustices that I saw growing up. And yet, it's still here. I get pulled over. I have a fairly new car. When I get pulled over, the first question is, whose car is this? You know, it takes me back, and that automatically puts me in a defensive attitude, a defensive way of looking at things. And I see this cop looking at me as this young black male, and he's judging me, saying that I'm most likely a drug dealer. I most likely stole this car. how does that make me feel after working hard all throughout college or now working for the city of Memphis? I look at my check every time I get it, and I cringe to see the tax that comes out of it. Just to know that my tax money is going to the police department that oppresses my people. I remember being 13, 14 years old and seeing friends at the same age be beat up by police officers, put in handcuffs, and taken to jail. At 14, these children are minors, but they're being put in cells. And no one heard about it. It didn't make the news. I remember multiple times while in college having confrontations with police officers to the point of physical altercation where my friends are fighting the cops and we're fighting the cops because they say we're somebody who we're not. Or they use force when they didn't have to. You know, after a school party on the strip of Knoxville would let out, they would push us onto the street off of the sidewalk into oncoming traffic, telling us to go to our car. And so as a human being, we are going to defend ourselves. And if in this case of the Stand Your Ground with Trayvon Martin, I look at it and I say, this man Zimmerman was following Trayvon. He told his girlfriend, I think there's someone following me. In that situation, it's fight or flight. You're either going to run, or at one point when you feel like you have no defense, you're going to fight. And there is no stand your ground if someone is pursuing you, or if you are pursuing that person. How can you stand ground when you're coming onto that person's ground? But where I am today is I see the marches. We had a great, you know, gathering here at the Civil Rights Museum here in Memphis. They met, they prayed, they rallied, and then they left. No legislation was drafted. No positive initiatives were talked about. It was all spiritual. That's all great. But I feel as if you take the first step, and God will take the rest. But you have to have that first push, that first step, that first initiative, to at least let God know that you want it. But if all we do is march, we are nothing but footprints in the sand that will be blown away the next wind or will be washed away with the next wave. So how can we do better than the last generations? How can we face the obstacles that we have today? When Martin Luther King marched, he marched, but he also looked for legislative process, you know, with the Civil Rights Act. He helped get that passed. What initiatives are we taking to make sure that this does not happen anymore? Because I don't want my son to grow up fearing the same things that I fear. I don't want my son to have to keep things from me for fear that his mother or father will not let him go outside or go hang out with his friends because they fear that a police is going to shoot him. You know, I remember multiple times having guns pulled out in my face by police officers. You know, being a young kid, you know, going out, experiencing the club scene, getting out and cops pulling guns on you.
Mm-hmm. This is Tammy. I want to come back in just for a minute because something Brandon just said about, you know, and I thought about this since the story aired, but how many times I would get angry at Brandon because he wants to sit outside. And, I mean, this is at our house, and I may have taken it to the extreme, but we're at home. Brandon wants to go outside in the yard. Maybe he's on the phone talking, walking in the front yard. He may have go to the backyard and come back in. Now, we're at our house, and I would not want him outside because I felt like if the police pass by and they see you outside, the first thing they're going to do is say, they're going to ask him, which there's nothing wrong with asking. That's patrolling. That's trying to keep us safe. But I felt as though it could get out of hand. And I'm not putting this all on the police because I feel, and I've had this conversation with Brandon, Brandon is so angry when it comes to police officers. So I also, and I've talked with him over and over and over again about that and said, Brandon, you have to understand they don't know what they're walking into. So I've not just been all against the police officers. I've sat and told him that many, many times, and I've said, just take it. I always say the best way to look at something, if you want to look at it logically, reverse it. Make that police your father or your mother walking up to a car that is unknown or a person that's unknown, and they don't know what holds. But when I have to fear that, when I don't want him sitting outside in his car, which I do sometimes, I'll pull up and I just sit in my car. It's just, I don't know, maybe he got it from me. I'll just sit there and sometimes it'll take a minute before I get out. I don't want him doing that. I don't want him sitting outside in our driveway in his car out of fear of the police officer saying something. And that could be also, I saw my brother go through that. My brother and his friend at a very young age, you know, they were at the friend's sister's house, but the friend lived there with his sister, was being raised by his sister. He was trying to tell them, look, my pictures are here. I live here. They didn't want to hear it. That's not logic. They were really trying to convince, let's call my sister, whatever. Brandon's friend, one of his best friends, were kind of the same scenario, was knocking on his sister's door, who happened to be, I think, in the shower or something and couldn't come to the door right then. He ended up getting beat by the cop that night because he was trying to tell them, my sister lives here. And he was put in jail. 14 years old. And he was trying to say, my sister lives here. She is here. She knows I'm coming over. They wouldn't even wait for her to come to the door. So when a kid sees this, when a young person sees this, you know, how are they to grow up from that? We have to find a way to find some common ground so that the police officers know, and I'm not saying that they don't know, but where we can get them together to express themselves and allow this group to see, you know, what cops go through. They want to get back home at night, too. So, again, I'm not saying all cops are bad, but we need them and they need us. And we need to find a common ground. And when things like this happen, whether it's a mistake or something, we need people to stand up and say, this should not have happened. Not just people, not just neighbors, I mean people of authority. You know, we've had people come on the news and they want to beat around the bush. They want to dance around the issue. But we're telling kids there are consequences to your choices that you make. So I would like to see people stand up for this, people of authority. And if they're not doing it in your area, in your neighborhood, force them to do so. I want Victoria to get in on here because we've not allowed her to introduce herself, so we want her to get in on this. And then I see that some of you have pressed the number one, so we're going to get to you in just a second. I see that we have two people that have selected the number one. So remember, if you do have something you want to share, just go ahead and select the number one now. I want to say that 615 Nashville, I see you out there. We'll get to you in just a second. We have the Memphis number as well, last four, 2223. If you'll just hold on, we're going to get to you. I want to allow Victoria time to introduce herself and just kind of give her input on how she feels about this and what we need to do. Victoria?
All right. Good evening, everyone. My name is Victoria Arnold. I'm Tammy's cousin. I attend Eagles Landing High School in McDonough, Georgia. And after hearing about the case, really when it went, like, worldwide, I remember coming back to school, and in my economics class, not my economics, my government class now, we were discussing it. My teacher said, well, how do you guys feel about it? So it's this one person in the class, this guy raised his hand, and he goes, well, there's plenty of people out there like Trayvon Martin, so why does this one matter? And when that was said, of course, like, the whole room got quiet. Everybody's like, well, how can you be so insensitive? And my government teacher just said, well, you know what, it's this one person's case that's gone, like, national and the whole world pretty much knows about it that raises the issue of police officers and brutality and all that other type of stuff. So that's what happened in my government class. And really, like, at my school, everybody's kind of clicked off in their own groups. You've got, you know, the foreign people who are together, and then you've got, of course, the black groups. And, you know, the white people, they even have their own group. Really, it's in my class, not really other people's classes, but pretty much my senior class is just we're all sectioned off. And after my government teacher has said it's this one case has brought it as an, you know, brought it to everyone's attention about the real issues. And I think that's important, like, where to go now.
What I wonder about is when, you know, your classmate said, you know, there's a lot of people that are like Trayvon. It's almost like, well, why hasn't anything been done about it yet? Why has this been let go for so long to where when we are now in 2012 and we see something like the Trayvon case and it's like a slap in the face? Well, you know, something happened. Why? How did we get to this point?
Well, I mean, I think what you said earlier, how we met here, we gathered here, we get excited when things, just to be a part of something, it doesn't last, though, because, again, Trayvon is by far not the first that this has happened to. I wonder how long this fire will burn, and what I'm saying is we should not let this burn out. We should keep gasoline on this so that there are no more Trayvon Martins and none of the others. I shared with you a couple of weeks ago the names of several others, even as young as 10 years old, being shot down by a police officer with no weapon on the way to the store. Then, you know, people got fired up about that. I mean, down from Al Sharpner to all of that. But the fire burned out. It burned out. And I think society realizes that, you know, just give them time. They'll something else will come along that will draw their attention. And I'm not just talking about black people, because there are white people fighting for this. There are all races fighting and standing up for the Trayvon Martin story. We should continue to do so. We should continue to educate our police officers, educate our children, and I mean to the effect where, I mean, Brandon, I'm sure, always doesn't agree with me, but I say right in front of him, I have defended police officers in saying they don't know what they're walking up to. So the more polite you can be, you know, do what they ask you to do. But in his eyes, Mom, I've seen people do that. I've seen people try to respect them. I've seen guys, you know, do all they can not to, as he says, piss them off. Well, we should not have to feel that way. We should not have to. Our children should be respectful, of course. But once they've seen that, if you see this, you know, it's just like a child seeing a cop in a uniform do something that they should not do. In most cases, that child is now doesn't want to ever see a cop in a uniform. But more importantly, I think, again, what we need to be discussing is how can this happen and law enforcement show up and nothing happens. Not the man's gun is not taken. He's not checked to see if he's been drinking, if he has had drugs in his system. There's no background check ran on him. How does this happen? I've heard many stories. I've heard that his father was part of the police department at some point. I heard that his mother was a clerk for the police department. Certainly, when that is so, corners are cut. But to think that this, that you can get away with this to this magnitude. We're not talking about the child was just beat up. How are you going to explain this if you don't? And you can take the law out, because the law, to me, is not an issue here. Because just because there's a stand your ground, it doesn't mean that, okay, I can shoot you and now there's no investigation. And that's what I mean. What about the investigation? We want to bring some of the callers in. And I'm going to bring them in the order that we receive them in. So I'm going to go ahead and bring, I'm going to identify you by the area code 901, and the last four digits of your number is 2223. and you're on air with us. If you could tell us your name.
Good evening. Hello. I'm Travis Blair.
Hi, Travis. How are you?
All right. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for calling.
I'm glad that we're talking about this subject. This Trayvon Martin subject has really touched my heart. And more importantly, not just the issue of race, but my heart goes out for the parents and the fact that they lost their child over something that was so senseless. And I've seen them a couple of times. I've Googled them on and I searched for them on YouTube, and I've watched a couple of their interviews, and I can see the pain in their eyes. And I know I don't have kids of my own yet, but I just sat back and imagined, what if that was my nephew?
Right.
What if that was one of my nephews? What if that was me?
It's a very hard pill to swallow. It is very hard, and you're so right. And that's why I'm glad you're calling in, even from the aspect of not having children, because it is important for people to realize, even if you don't, you know, you may be an uncle. I saw the picture of Trayvon with his family, and there were so many surrounding him, you know, there with his little cousin, little something. You know, now this has to be explained to those young, where is my cousin? And they have to see it. So you're exactly right. And the pain, I cannot, it is just, it's unimaginable to me to have to think that this is how my son left this world. And this is the way that it was handled. That, I think, is just beyond even the pain. Like, just to hear those cries and to hear the story of how it played out, there's so many things, even down to I heard that they didn't find out right away that night. And that puzzled me that, you know, the father didn't find out that night that they had already taken the child's body away. And I don't know if that's true, but, you know, just the whole ordeal is just beyond imaginable to me. Words cannot explain, particularly being a mom. So, thank you. Did you have anything else you wanted to voice?
Yes, ma'am. I don't know if everyone has heard the audio tape of the one of the neighbors calling, and the audio tape where the neighbor called, and you can hear Trayvon crying out for help.
Yes.
But I heard that audio tape, and It's tough. It's tough for me personally to listen to hear him crying out in agony for help seconds before he was shot and killed.
Right.
That was tough for me.
Right, and it was also tough. I don't know if you remember or did if you got the chance to see the young fellow who was walking the dog, and he said he could hear it, but as he was being interviewed, he said, he wonders, had he gone around, had he just went around, would Trayvon have been shot? And I thought, I wondered, did anybody catch what this young man, I think he's like 10 or 11, and he said, I wonder if I had went around. What he did was went back in and he told his sister, and his sister called 911. But this young fella at this age has said, if I had gone, I wonder would he have shot him? And that... I just wondered if did anybody really hear what he just said? He's saying maybe if I had just showed my presence, you know, maybe Trayvon would be here today.
Mm.
You know, I've not heard, you know, I've not personally heard the others say any of that. That just shows the heart that, you know, the heart of a child is just so pure. And for him to take it there, I just really wondered, did you guys hear what he said? Like, is anybody going to pick up on this and really talk to this child? Because that can leave him devastated. So a lot to take in, but I so agree with you. I have heard the cries. I have cried myself, you know, wondering, too, what if someone had just gone out? You know, what if someone had just flicked something? Flick the light. I don't know. But There's nothing we can do about Trayvon now because we can't bring him back, but we need to make a change. We need to start and make a change. And again, for those of you who are local, stay connected to my page and Brandon's page because we have something that we're working on that will involve police officers as well, and hopefully we can get someone to listen because, you know, even right here in our city alone, there's cases that we don't hear about, that we just don't hear about. And I think for so many reasons that we don't. But we have to stand up and demand that, oh, we want to know about every case, and we want there to be no cases. So thank you, Travis. Are you a first-time listener?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Well, thank you, and we hope that you tune in. And if we say anything else that strikes you to you know, comment, just reselect the number one. We'll bring you back in. But thank you for listening, and please share the word about the show.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I think we have Stacy online with us and from Nashville.
Hello.
Hi, Stacy.
Hi, how are you guys?
We are wonderful. How are you?
Good, good. What I wanted to, like, touch upon, I think you're talking about at the beginning, how in different cultures, how we're starting to, you know, see the diversity. Like, you have your African-American males who are wearing the hoodies, but you also have the Caucasians who are there going through, and they're being attacked by different cultures. So I guess my perspective on it, like, as a woman, as a young woman, now that I wear the hijab, you know, I feel when I walk outside that I can be attacked in any kind of way. It's kind of like I'm afraid to do things now. Just like I have that conscious, like, oh, well, what if something's going to happen? And I have the conscious of, oh, well, should I not wear my hijab? Should I put a beanie on my head and walk around? Just for the simple fact, I might get attacked for doing nothing to anybody or just being myself. And, I know there's, like, very diversity because, like, in my high school, you had, like, the blacks on one side and the whites in the middle and the Mexicans on another end. So we're all very split up in our own way. But as for me, as I got older, my auntie would be like, why are you traveling alone at nighttime? And at the time, I really didn't think of it as a threat to my life, but, you know, there's so many things going on in the world, not just for boys, but for women as well, not men, for women as well, that you tend to get, like, you get, what is the word I'm looking for? You kind of, like, start to protect yourself a little bit more than you used to, and now that I wear the hijab, I'm protecting myself a little bit more than I used to. I don't just go out randomly. I have to think about what time I'm going out and is it a good time to go out. I know there was an incident this weekend when I was at the mall and I was wearing my job, of course, and I had this male, like, that would run me over and clearly was just not caring whatsoever and was like, why don't you take that thing off? I can't see you. And I was like, well, why don't you open your eyes? Like, clearly in the mall, you have all this space. Why are you about to run me over? So far,
hey,
as a woman.
Stacey, just to add to you, I know some of the listeners might not know exactly what the hijab is, but just to clarify, and I'll let you continue, the hijab is the headscarf that is worn by women of the Muslim faith or women that are a part of Islam. And so this is what the hijab is. But continue. I just knew a couple people didn't know what that was.
Okay. Thanks. But when I was at the mall, I was like, randomly, I'm walking into this store, and this guy is about to run me over. And I'm just like, are you serious? You could have moved? Or literally, I'm in the middle. Like, I'm about to enter the store, and this guy is not budging down. Like, he's about to run me over. Clearly, like, I can't see you, but I'm just like, why don't you open your eyes? I'm clearly dressed. You know, I am a woman, but I start to nowadays start to feel like some I need to protect myself a little bit more because I don't know what's going to happen to me because I'm wearing a hijab. I could walk down the street and somebody could see me as a threat and I'm wearing a hijab. Just as Trayvon Martin was just wearing a regular hoodie with a bag of Skittles and a peach, I mean tea.
There was a, I don't know if you heard, but recently there was a case in California where a woman was killed in her home after having, she was an Iraqi woman, after having threats from different people around the neighborhood to leave their neighborhood. And she was killed because of her being Muslim and her having the hijab. So once again, these injustices, you know, blanket more than one minority. You know, there's so many stereotypes that the media portrays, I think mostly, that they don't see the repercussions for. They don't see the aftermath. They just see it as a good story. They see it as sensationalism. They see it as, I'm saying the words that are going to sell this story. If I call this person a terrorist, if I call this person a thug, if I call this person an insurgent, you know, if I dehumanize this person, it will be easier for people, you know, to condemn them. It will be more sensational for people to look at. They'll tune in longer. Now, those ratings are causing deaths in our community. Those ratings, those words and the propaganda that they use, you know, just to get a couple more viewers, are the very same things that are destroying the social fiber here in the United States, where we used to champion ourselves for having integrity and having a multiple of different races. Mm-hmm. On the back of our quarters, it says in Latin, e pluribus unum, which means out of many one. But how are we that when one suppresses the other? Now, that's one thing we can't do. So what I would like to do, and I would call out to the listeners, is what are the solutions? Where do we go from here? Do you guys have any suggestions to contest, you know, the injustices that we see every day here in our society, in our communities? What can we do to have to make sure the police officers serve and protect as they are meant to do? Because they were put in place, that system, the police department was put in place to protect us. They were put there as a social good so that it would be easier to do away with crime and the outliers that would bring harm to our communities. So now it's coming back that I don't know if it's the system that isn't working, but it's definitely the way it is implemented. So if you guys have any suggestions, I invite you to stand up and speak that, no matter how big, how small, how detailed, or how general. Give us something, and hopefully and put this into your own communities. Thank you, Stacey. It's good to hear from you.
Thank you, Stacey, and as always, thanks for being a loyal listener.
Try to help you out every week.
Thank you. Okay, we do have another caller, and I am going to put Stacey on hold here. And I'm going to bring in the caller from the 816 area code, and your last four is 3056. Caller, you're on the air with us. If you'll tell us your name and where you're from.
Thank you. Okay, we do have another
caller. Hello, hi. My name is Dominique Givens, and I'm from Kansas City, Missouri.
Hi, Dominique. How are you?
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you for calling in tonight. I think if you could turn it down, turn the volume maybe down just a little bit, because I think you're getting the feedback from my voice as well.
You hear me now?
We can hear you fine. Can you hear us okay?
I do.
Okay.
Okay, I want to say something that's a little different from what, you know, people have spoken on thus far, and that is that we must remember that, you know, from a religious standpoint, that we are dealing with people that are inhuman, that act inhuman, that are rebellious and without conscience. Therefore, as far as when you say, what can we do about the injustices, we need to pray. I haven't heard too many people say that, but we need to bring prayer back into schools. We need to bring prayers into our homes. We need to teach our kids how to pray. we need to realize that, you know, a lot of these people out here don't care. You know, I mean, this goes back hundreds of years. And, you know, you would think that, you know, okay, there has to be a solution. But God told us, I mean, Jesus told us that, you know, you will face tribulation. He did say that, though you walk through the valley of death, I will be with you. So the caller that said, well, I had my hoodie on or something, and they said, I can't see you, take it off. Well, you know, yeah, you may not be doing anything wrong, but one thing we must do is we need to learn to humble ourselves and say, okay, you know what, I'm right in what I'm doing. I'm not doing anything wrong, but if it will cause, if it will stop the confusion, then I'll take it off. I mean, because my mother used to tell me, hey, you know what, there's nothing wrong with being right, but don't be dead right. I mean, and we don't know, you know, I mean, I know that the police, are, you know, I mean, like you said, Tammy, that, you know, they're not all wrong. But
right.
We don't know, we really don't know the exchange that happens when a cop approaches a young black teen. We don't know the conversation. We really don't know it. But a lot of times we feel, hey, I'm not doing nothing wrong. Why are you talking to me? Why? I mean, what's the problem? But we need to just learn to humble ourselves. And I'm not saying that, I'm not making any excuses for the police, but I'm saying when you say, what can we do? We can just say, you know what, I did everything I could to make sure that, you know, the violence, that there was no more violence brought upon me, that there's no more exchange brought upon me. I mean, maybe if I just say, okay, officer, I understand, and just walk away. But I have heard myself firsthanded people argue with cops. I've done it myself in the past, you know, where I'll say, you know, well, why are you stopping me? I didn't do anything wrong. I mean, you know, I mean, we just automatically feel when we're doing nothing wrong to defend ourselves. And, you know, I mean, we just have to keep praying. That's what we have to do. We just have to keep praying and make sure that our children know, you know, just do whatever you can do to avoid. And I know that there are going to be injustices. There are going to be, you know, people that don't care whether they're right or wrong. There is always going to be racism. All we can do, we can't change it. But, I mean, I doubt that it will ever change because it's been going on for over 400 years, 500 years. But I can say that we must change the way we deal with it, especially when it comes to our children. All we can do is just teach them to be humble. That's all we can do, whether you're right, wrong, whatever. Just say, okay, you know, I mean, it's so sad. And I'm like you. I've cried. Why? We don't have the answers. We will never have the answers, you know, because we're not omnipresent. We're not like God. We can't be everywhere. We don't know people's minds. But all we can do is stay in the Bible and follow what it tells us. They wrong Jesus, and they're wronging us, and we're no better than him. So we're not even close. So, you know, I just think that we're going to continue to deal with this. But we can't call people out when they've done something wrong. Like that police department, there's no excuse. That guy is still walking around free. There's no excuse. So I think we should continue to make noise. But when your son just spoke about, and I think that was your son, right, that just went off talking about what can we do about the injustices.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think that we should just, you know, keep preaching and you know, the Bible. Just keep talking the Bible. Because, I mean, till the end of time, remember, this is prophecy, everything that we're going through. And I know this is a different take than what everybody else has talked about, but nobody, I have not heard very many people speak on that. And it's true. You just can't get around it. No matter how much you try to, you cannot get around the fact that Jesus said, you know, yea, though I walk through the shadow of the valley of death, I should fear no evil, because he's with you. So you're going to deal with things. You're going to deal with people not liking you because of your color, you know, all kinds of stuff, you know, that promotion, everything, you know, getting a ticket when you did nothing wrong. I mean, we're going to deal with that. And I'm not trying to make light of what happened, but I'm saying that, you know, we need to realize that, you know, there are heartless people out here. And no matter how much you preach to them, they don't care. They have no conscience. So how we deal with that, just pray. Keep praying and pray some more. And that's really what I had to say, what I have to say, and you know, I'm with you all the way on getting those police, talking to the police departments. I think we need to do that. We need to hold people accountable, and we need to get them to talk about, you know, these laws, you know, the reason behind, you know, this law that was enforced in what was that, Florida?
Yeah, you know, and there's actually several more, many more states. I don't have that right in front of me, but there's mm-hmm. at least 20 plus more that have basically that same law. And Tennessee has some. Tennessee is somewhere in there. I don't know exactly how it's worded for Tennessee, but you're right. I mean, and those are the things in addition to, you know, prayer. I'm so with you on that. Brandon mentioned that we came together and prayed. Brandon and I went together to the mm-hmm. function that they had here last Monday, I believe it was.
Okay.
And we
okay.
went down, and we, you know, they prayed and talked, and there were kids and adults and of all race, you know, just everybody. And what he said was, okay, yes, we certainly have to pray, and I think prayer has become the minority, so to speak, even in the
exactly.
religious life. You mm-hmm. you can barely find a church that consistently on a weekly basis will open up for prayer, whereas in my time,
right.
I grew up, we sat literally for hours at church and just looked at
mm-hmm.
our ancestors pray. I mean, we're like, what are they doing? How long are they going to be here?
right.
But it
right.
got them through. So I'm so with you on that. We certainly need to pray, and we certainly need to get our kids to a point where they see us praying and believing and having that faith as well. And in addition to that, living that life,
right.
that,
mm-hmm.
that life that we are telling them to live and doing the things that we are telling them to do rather than, you know, this old saying, do as I say and not as I do. So with that,
mm-hmm.
Many things come after that. So I'm so with you on that. And in addition to one more thing I wanted to add, because Brandon is itching to get in over here. But
okay.
When we are stopped, I'm so with you on that too, which is how I've tried to talk to Brandon over and over again. It is not worth
mm-hmm.
you being dead right. And these kids
Correct.
Today, these young people today are so strong-headed. If they could just get it together, if they could incorporate prayer and God in their lives, they will be some awesome people because they are
exactly.
so strong-minded and so strong, you know, willed. So I'm so with you on that. And that's what I try to tell
okay.
him. The one thing I want to add to that is if you feel justified after you did everything, you comply with whatever
mm-hmm.
that officer is telling you, because, again, it's not worth you being dead right. Then
right.
you come home and mama got the rest. Mama and dad,
That's
you
right.
tell us, we're going down, we're going to do it the right way, because I'm going down
right.
and I'm asking for this person who stopped my son, I need you to get him off the street right now, and I need you to call him in this office.
I know
because,
that's right.
So that's what and I'm so glad you brought it up, because kids need to hear that too. It's not worth you being dead right. It's
right.
not worth it
that's
at
right.
all.
Thank you very
so
much.
So thank you
for
bringing that part up. And Brandon has a little more that he wants to share.
Okay.
Hey, Dominique. Hey, Dominique.
Hey,
thank you so much for your suggestion of prayer. And I totally, you know, agree with you. And I would also like to add something to it.
Okay.
In prayer, for some reason, it made me think of Moses when he was called to do to free the people from the Egyptians.
Mm-hmm.
You know, remember he had a speech impediment. Remember he couldn't speak well,
right.
and he
mm-hmm.
he was
That's
very
right.
fearful, and said, "Well, you know, God, how can I do this?" You know, there was that lack of courage, and God was basically like, you know, because he's God, you know, you can go ahead and
right.
and go fully in that and have faith in that. But
mm-hmm.
also one thing that I know about Moses is not only did he go on top of the mountain and pray and receive those revelations, not only did he did that, but he also led a war. And I'm not
mm-hmm.
saying that we should ever go out and condone any kind of violence or anything like that. I'm saying more on a spiritual level, more on an activist level.
Right. Mm-hmm.
There's so much that we can do, but we also have to take. I feel like we also have to take a step, but we just have to make sure that our next move is our best move, and that we are
Correct.
Humble in our steps. Because in humility, there's power. I think about humility and power, and I think about a tree, for example. It,
mm.
it there's so many stems on that tree that have branches and stems and leaves, and they are many, but the tree is one. The trunk is one. You cut off a stem, you cut off a branch, you know, that tree will still be alive. But if you cut that tree, all those branches will die. So there's power in humility. And the same thing with the rivers and the streams. They all lead to one sea. You cut the sea, they won't exist. You stop a river, the sea
That's
will
fine.
Still be there. So I agree with that humility and prayer. But we also, as you walk through the shadow of, you know, in the valley of the shadow of death, you still have to walk.
That's
you know?
Correct. That's correct. And know that God will be with you when you are right. So
right.
That's right. Correct. That I like that. I can appreciate everything you said, and I'm in total agreement with that. Thank you for that.
Thank you so much for your suggestion, and I totally agree with you. Thank you for listening again.
She's right here, so she can help in the movement.
Okay. Yeah, my mother said that you're right here in Memphis, so you can help in the movement.
Oh, yeah. She definitely knows. You know who I am. Yeah, I'm right there with you. You just let me know what we can do, and I'm right there on your wagon.
Well, thank you, and we'll get together as we again. We have some ideas and some approaches that we want to take here, and we are
right.
hopeful that we can
okay.
get it going, and then maybe have some people for those of you who are in other cities and states. You know, again, send me a message, and then we can kind of connect, because I'd like to have somebody that will be willing to take this on and take it up in other cities and other states as well. And that's where
right.
that's part of the solution. And it has to be people it has to be praying people, God-fearing people.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be those people, because that's what it's going to take. It's going to take
exactly.
that.
Exactly. I agree, girl.
All right. Thank you.
Yep.
Yeah, thank
You're
you
welcome.
So much. We're going to go
you.
Ahead and take you out of queue. Thank you again.
Okay.
Now I would like to just give a couple statistics and some things that I think would possibly help. Statistics from the Department of Justice indicate that black males are incarcerated, which means held in prison or jail, at a rate that is over 6 times higher than that for white males. So that means that for every 100,000 black males, an estimated 4,777 are in federal or state prison or a local jail. Now, by contrast, for every 100,000 white men, there's only 727 that are estimated to be incarcerated. So I want to paint the picture of the Trayvons that you see every day driving in the car or the car next to you that might have some hip-hop music, or the person that's walking around and you might have a hoodie on or some headphones in, or you know, dribbling basketball down the street, which none of these things are against the law, but yet they are still victims to the color of their skin, the culture and the music of which they listen to. One thing that I suggest is opening a line of communication with the police officers that are inside of our neighborhoods, because I notice that when I go out and a cop pulls up next to me at the light, I feel that same feeling as if somebody that I had earlier gotten into a fight with was standing right next to me or approaching me. And it's a very eerie feeling. It's I don't know if it's sometimes testosterone or if it's adrenaline or anything like that, but I share that same feeling with a lot of other black males. And we've talked about it and discussed it and it's almost like when you step out onto your own home, your own backyard, you still feel like a prisoner. And it shouldn't be that way, not in our neighborhoods. If you go outside and you feel like you are looked at as an animal, then you feel like you have to defend yourself. You feel very defensive, just to keep your own peace, just to keep your own safety. And so I feel like any time, whether it's a relationship you have with a family member, a wife, a husband, an authority figure, anything, there's always a disconnect or a lack of communication that's there. I don't think that it's every police officer's, you know, vendetta to get out to every minority, nor do I think that every minority, you know, just absolutely hates the police. We both understand the purpose of the community and the police officer relationship. But how can we make that more beneficial for life here in America? So I say we open up those channels of communication. We incorporate, you know, accountability and transparency with these police departments. I feel like they should hold community meetings where they explain to us how internal investigations work, how long it takes, what's the disciplinary action if misconduct is found within the department. How can we see that? Is there any kind of external oversight? Is there someone that checks the police department? If we do make a complaint, what is the process? Most people don't even know to take down a police officer's badge number. So when these injustices happen on a daily basis, they feel powerless. Powerless. They're like, I don't remember the cop's name. He didn't mention it. He knows mine because he got my ID. We'll take his and find out what his badge number is. We have that right. My mother just said we have that right. Also, with these community meetings, they should have, you know, people in the community to come and learn different things, just general education about the judicial system. We're fighting an injustice right now. The root word of that is justice. How can we fight a beast that we don't even understand? Go somewhere and ask a random person, minority or not, the Fifth Amendment, the First Amendment, the 14th, the Privacy Clause, you know, about search and seizure. They know not. So what can we do to educate young people despite their race so that just through education they have power? Because we are powerless and immobilized due to a lack of education. And when you don't have knowledge and you don't have and you don't have guidance, and then you're already on a financial strain, most of these minorities, and then you go outside and you have to deal with people in your neighborhood that are probably out to get you, and then you have to see the cops coming by. That's building a cage, and every single person that is considered an animal when he's put in a cage is going to want to get out in one or two ways. He's going to act out. They're going to fight. They're going to, you know, cause attention. There's so many things that come from that. So I say we focus on and champion building communication with between the police department and the communities. We should have a liaison that goes back and forth, that deals with these communications, and let the patrolling officers that are assigned to patrol these specific neighborhoods have them be there so that the people can get to know them. You know, so that when they're driving by, they're not just a random officer, they're not just a random cop car where people associate, you know, blue lights with, you know, black knights. We don't want that. Because now we look at them as an opposition. That's why when I see the tax taken out, I'm like, man, this is going to the fact this money is going out and helping putting my brothers in jail most of the time for things that they shouldn't be, or because they were prejudged. So if you guys have any other suggestions, please come in. I see. Do we have any in yet?
No. The lines are back open.
Yeah, the lines are open. If you guys have any suggestions or just a comment, we would love to hear. If there's some elders on the line that you lived through the civil rights movement and you saw how some things were actually, how plans and policies were put into place to help the minorities have a voice, to help the Trayvons not to die in vain, then please say something. The lines are open.
I just want to say, I'm going to keep talking until I see someone else come in. And I'm not sure. I do see that we, and maybe that's just from the previous call where we bought in Travis and Stacy. For some reason, yours is still highlighted. So I may just click you in just a minute to make sure that you didn't have another comment or question. But, again, as Brandon and as we said tonight, it starts with us. We certainly cannot bring Trayvon back, but we can certainly work to make sure that this doesn't happen again. And particularly in your area, it starts in your area. I think it was a great idea what Brandon said about neighborhoods. You know, we have neighbors that don't know neighbors. We have neighbors that don't know who lives where because we're so all preoccupied in our own lives. So make a decision to do something today. And I say that basically in every show that I do. Don't just make Monday night show, this Monday night show, a place to just have your ears open. Take what we say, what we talk about, bring to it, because we all have something to share, and then take it out. Take it out. I mean, anything that goes in should come out, basically. So keep your minds focused. Let's not lose sight of this story. Let's not let the fire burn out. But at the same time, let's not let this death be in vain. Let's stand up. Let's find a solution, and let's come together and work towards it. It's about more than coming together on one day in every city, having the news people, the media show up. We're on TV, we're praying, and we go back. Nothing's done. That's why we continue to have these reoccurrences. Because what they're saying is just something else will come along and they will move to the next story. That's media. Brandon mentioned education and knowledge. There is nothing keeping you from knowledge. Now, you can be kept from education in the sense of being educated by a four-year degree, two-year degree, or whatever. There's nothing. You can walk in Barnes & Noble and read any book that you want without buying it. You just need to walk in and pick the book up. There's online books. So knowledge is free. So that's my challenge to you all tonight. This has been a wonderful, wonderful show. I kind of had reservation about doing it, but I'm glad that we did it. I think it was a very positive show. I think we all can take something away from it. Take some time, if you have the time, to go back and listen to the show. For those of you who are local, or if you're not local and you want to hear about what we plan on trying to do here in Memphis, we'd be glad to share it with you. We still have some work to do, lots of work to do. We just have been brainstorming the idea. You may have something addition to add to it, so please, please, please reach out to me. You can send an email through the blog talk, or you can contact me by phone at 901-830-6088. You'll probably receive my voicemail, leave a message, and I'll call you back for sure. I'm just going to make sure that Stacy and Travis did not have another comment. Stacy, were you on just from the previous time? I have you back in queue. Did you have something else to add?
No. Well,
okay.
No,
okay. Maybe I didn't take you off properly, okay?
You're good.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
I thought you were about to
take you
off
in the middle of your statement.
Okay. I do know, like, this story is, like, starting to get, like, huge. And I do, like, feel sometimes, I remember I was walking around and I heard that Nas and somebody else had put up, like, No Church in the Wild did a remix to the Kanye and Jay-Z's version of the Trayvon Martin story. And it just, like, I got to the point where I'm just, like, I want to cry because it's like no justice is getting served and we're just letting this man walk around. But the thing that hit me was, I think it was the next day, I was working at the school, and this little girl, she couldn't play outside. And she came up to me and she was just like, did you hear about the Trayvon Martin story? Just how, like, it's getting to young kids and, you know, they don't know all that's going on. And wondering, as that little 10-year-old boy mentioned, if I would have walked around, then I probably could have saved them. How is this being looked by, like, younger kids? Like, will they start to get afraid? Because I know I was walking around at nighttime. I had my hijab, but I had a hoodie on. And my friend down the street was like, you're wearing a hoodie and it's nighttime. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. Like, I'm, you know, and then I have, like, people telling me that this neighborhood or, like, around this neighborhood is a bad place, like the neighborhood beside us. And it kind of makes me get a little scared that I am wearing a job with the hoodie on and then random cop cars, like Brenda said, maybe if we do get to know who the cops are riding around our neighborhood, get to be on that level, we wouldn't feel so, like, caged. We can actually explore.
Especially in your own neighborhood. And that's something that you can start right there in your neighborhood. You can go and say, you know, who patrols our community. I know that a friend of mine some time ago did like a block party for their community, and it was just a wonderful thing. There were police officers there, there were firemen there, the mayor was there. Will it be the solution? No, but it will certainly help to have police officers familiar with the community, particularly the communities that they patrol. And if it's not a certain area that they patrol, maybe that's something that we together can say, listen, this might assist in some of the breakdown, I guess, of the communication, or, you know, the knowing who belongs here and who does not. Not saying that there won't ever be someone that's just kind of in the neighborhood, but if a police officer gets to know, you know, I pretty much know who lives here in this house. And that's how it used to be. I mean, I think in a sense. I remember being stopped by a police officer, and I was a young girl, and I was in the car with three other girls, and they were, you know, all of us were girls, and it was late one night. We had been out celebrating. I believe one of us had turned 21. And driving, and the police stopped us. And I remember telling him he wanted my friend, the driver, to get out of the car and come back to his car. And I said, wait, we, I mean, why does she have to go back? And I said it nicely. I said, why does she have to go back to your car for you to give her what, you know, she needs to give you? We don't know you. We know that you're a cop, but there's no reason for her to go back there. Can you not do that here? And he looked at me, and I remember him just kind of laughing at me, but he said, okay, she can stay here. And it turned out to be a really good conversation. He didn't even give her a ticket, but he ended up just talking to us and telling us, you know, we needed to go home and that kind of thing. But it was just different. It was different. And maybe it's different for females. I also remember being stopped one time before by about 12 police cars simply because we pulled in a rest area, and it was me and my cousin and her son. We pulled into a rest area, and for whatever reason, I decided, you know, I don't want to go into this one. We're going to keep going for a while. We were driving around the road and backed out, proceeded back on the interstate, and I look behind me, and there's like 12 to 13 police cars, just a line of cars that I could see forever. And I'm thinking, oh, wow, somebody's really did something. So I pull over, they pull over, and they're coming for me. And they walked up to the car with hands, you know, on their guns, some of them drawn. And when they realized that we were two females, they said, you can go. And, of course, I guess Brandon gets it from me. I wanted to know, well, what did you stop us for anyway, you know? And he said, well, there's been a robbery and there were two guys. But all I could think about, what if we were two guys? You know, mm-hmm. What if we were two guys? So
could have been the end of your life.
Could have been. But you know, but we were two girls, but they were looking for two guys. But what if we had been two guys just driving alone, traveling? Something as simple as pulling in a red stop and deciding that's not, you know, and I just kind of go by feel. If I get a feeling, no, not the place, and I don't know why I got that feeling, but I just said, not here, we're just going to keep going. So, you know, many things that we can do, and I hope that everyone has taken something and that everyone commits to being a part of something. If it's not something that you want to start, then be a part of it. There's always something that you can give back. So I'm going to end it there. I'm going to let Victoria and Brandon carry on and just end the show when they're ready. Victoria, did you have anything else you want to add?
I just enjoyed all the comments, all the feedback everybody's giving with suggestions and stuff. I think tonight was a really good topic.
I do, too. And I'm going to see. I'm just going to make sure. Travis, I don't know if you had another comment, but I just wanted to make sure because your light is still on, so I've pulled you back in queue. Was there anything else that you wanted to add?
Yes, ma'am. I just enjoyed this conversation tonight. I really didn't want to say a whole lot because I really needed to listen and just be educated on some things that we could do in our communities to make this situation better, to prevent this from happening again. And I totally agree with one of the callers when she began talking about prayer. And prayer is vital in this situation, not just in this situation, but in just in everything that we do in life, we need prayer. And prayer is the one thing that is going to allow us to stand. We need Christ, we need God in everything that we do. And in this country, we're taking God completely out of everything. We're taking God out of the Pledge of Allegiance. We're taking God out of prayer in the schools. And then that gives the enemy room to just rampage over this country. And that's why we have senseless murders. We have senseless rapes and all kinds of attacks, because the enemy has free reign, because we've completely taken God out of the equation.
And even out of the home, and I heard you, you know, listing a number of things, and even out of the home as well, I really was amazed when I was on search for a church. A number of years, a friend of and I were looking for a church to get up and do 6 a.m. prayer. We wanted to do an early morning prayer, actually, and we could not find a church that did early morning, that opened their doors up for early morning prayer. Eventually, we did. However, and it was a church with a large number of members, I would say, enough to where you would think you would show up and there would be more than you two who are not members of the church and two other people that were members of the church. I mean, you're talking about a mega church with thousands of people, but no one, it was the four of us that showed up for probably 2 months or more, and they finally just thought, you know, this, we can't continue to do this, so they closed the door. A few months ago, sometime last year, I went back on that same venture, even starting on my own at that time, looking for, you know, let's consider opening the doors up maybe at 6 a.m. for prayer. And I got nothing. I didn't even get an answer back. It's like nobody really wants to talk about doing prayer. And I know it's something in my life that I absolutely need for things that I go through and struggles that I deal with you know, within my own, within myself. And it's power in prayer. And certainly in the number of people coming together, where two or more gather. You know, the word tells us that. So
yes, ma'am.
I think Dominique made a great point in that. And now, Travis, I see that you're calling from a 901 area code as well. So you're right here in Memphis?
Yes, is that true? Yes, ma'am, right here in Memphis. And,
right.
And I will say this. I think the one thing that that really pushed the civil rights movement in the 60s forward was there were two different kinds of warriors. There was warriors who walked the streets and marched and protest for our rights. There were also spiritual warriors who was willing to pray in the church and pray in the homes to push the movement forward.
Wow.
And so we had both sides of that in full effect operating to see good come forth. And that's
okay.
What we need. We need not just warriors who are willing to protest and activize in the streets, but we also need the prayer warriors, the mothers of the church, who are willing to stay all day if we have to pray and pray without ceasing, praying until change comes. And that's what we need. So it's,
yeah.
I say it's definitely praying time.
It is. That is just so awesome and so, you're right, and I had not thought about it to that level when you say particularly the mothers of the church. And again, I can remember back in my day, I would see my grandmother praying beyond praying. I mean, it's just like that's all she did. You just catch her as she was walking,
yes,
and cleaning and washing her dishes, I think she was praying. As she was cleaning up, she was praying. And as a child, you think, how much, you know, really, how much can she be praying, you know, really, seriously? But as children, but as when you see that and you grow up in that, you come back to yourself. You come back to a place where you know what she knew. You know why she did what she did and how she kept going with what,
yes,
she was confronted with. So you are so right. And I hope that, just in case, for those of you who are still listening from the 901 and any areas, I'm going to give out my number again, because, again, we have some things going on here at already, we have the 901 Butterflies, and that's a group that I work with young girls, and we are hoping that we can start 901 Evolution, and that's a group where we mirror the program for the young girls, but it's for the young males, and I'll be the first to say, as a woman, I cannot give young men what they need. I can love them, and I can nurture them, and I can pray for them, but there's some things, even with my own son, I just had to go to people before and say, listen, I can't do this. And
what were you cooking?
You know, little does he know that I would go and ask people, can you go and talk to my son? Can you, you know, and I want him to know that I'm sending you, you know, man to man, can you go and talk to my son? So we need more men. For those of you who are first-time listeners, we had a young fellow that told one of our girls, this young man overheard the girls talking about what we do with them and how we meet and talk. And so he asked, what were they talking about? And so she shared with him that she was part of the 901 Butterflies and what we did. And he made the statement to her that they are always doing something for the girls. They never do anything like that for us. So that, when she came back and told me that, that really hurt me because, you know, that made me want to say, okay, I'm going to start doing it with the boys. But now I have to realize there's some things that I just have to step back from. Because if I couldn't give it to my own son in that way, then I can't really give it to them in the way that they need it. So for those males that are listening out there, Travis.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, I'm going to, particularly those in the, you know, 901 is where we do have it enforced for the girls. Just, you know, reach me through Facebook, through the Butterfly Evolution site on Blog Talk, or you can call me at 901-830-6088. Again, 901-830-6088. If you lose that number, you can always go back and listen to this show. Again, I'm on Facebook as well. So if it's something that you cannot do and you know someone that is, you know, that's their forte, that's their thing, please share it with them as well, because our young males need, they just need what we do for the girls. And they're right. We do a lot of things for young girls, but men are supposed to be the head of the household. Men are supposed to be the head, period. So if we're leaving them behind, and if we're, you know, a lot of women feel like we want to be in front. I'm one of those, I feel like sometimes I've had to be, not saying that I want it to be. Which is a totally different show, totally different, you know, another story, another day, another time. I'm going to pass it over to Brandon, and I'm going to let him close it out. Again, thank you to everyone that listened tonight. It was just a great show. We talked, you know, it didn't get out of control, so it's a very sensitive case, so I'm appreciative that all of you tuned in. We had a number of new listeners tonight. Thank you all for listening. Thank you for tuning in, and I hope to hear from at least one or two people from tonight's show, if not more, but I'm hoping that I do get some calls. I'm going to turn it back over to Brandon. Thanks to everyone.
Thank you, Travis. Thank you, Dominique. Thank you, Stacy, for your input. We really, really appreciate that, and hopefully we can do something about this case of Trayvon Martin. I mean, the stage is set. And the spotlight is on us. It's on us in the Trayvon Martin case. How will this moment in history be remembered? How will it be written? Are we going to be passive and let this pass and let Trayvon just be another injustice written down in a book to be forgotten, whose name is on? No. Or are we actually going to be positive players and do something about this? How can we better our communities with spiritual leaders, political leaders, whichever you are, wherever you are best, be there. If you have an opinion and you have the energy to speak about it and voice that opinion, then do something about it as well. Your tongue can only do so much, but use your hands, use your efforts, use your time wisely, and maybe we can make it out of this better than we started. Thank you guys again for listening. This is Tammy, Victoria, and Brandon on Butterfly Evolution, and we hope you tune in next week. We'll have more for you. Thank you again. Goodbye.